Linda, great to have you with me. Linda Crockett is an international expert on workplace bullying and harassment. She's also the founder of the Canadian Institute of Workplace Bullying Resources. And Linda, I want to thank you so much for taking part and participating in this summit, Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy Even in Crisis. And I know this issue all too well. You know it even better. So I'm so thrilled to have you here. We've had a chance to talk a little bit previously, and you have so much to offer people in this arena and suffering trauma and workplace bullying. So, but before we get into your initial experience and your expertise, which is vast, maybe we should spend a little bit of time talking about how you define workplace bullying. What is it, and perhaps what isn't it?
Great question. It's such a confusing topic because everybody defines it differently and uses different language. To really simplify it, workplace bullying, otherwise known here in Canada as psychological harassment, one form anyway, is a variety of negative expressions, comments, actions that you experience specifically like directed at you. Okay, so it's either directed at you or a group of you. So a group of people would be called mobbing. Okay. So one person is constantly, you know, insulting you, putting you in positions of embarrassment, humiliation, sabotaging you, calling you names, accusing you, whatever, a lot of negative stuff. And sometimes it can be quite aggressive, but it's specifically against you. And it's always over a period of time. It's never a one-time incident. A one-time incident is harassment, but it's not bullying. So it's a variety of negative behaviors over a period of time. Research used to say 6 months. And I would say because of our growing awareness, because of policies now, legislation coming out in different countries, I would say 3 months or more. So if you experience it for 3 months or more, with or without conscious intent, and it causes some form of harm. So that's really broad, but we can break that down.
Okay. And I'm interested in a few things. And look, nobody should be treated in an ill-mannered way at work. But we're also not necessarily talking about somebody who's spoken sternly to because they're late every day. They show up drunk. They don't do their assignments. That's really not what we're talking about here. So tell me, in terms of the behaviors that you're identifying on the side of the boss, then what is the product that you see? What happens to the bully target or bully victim in terms of the effect of the bullying on them? What are the kind of things you see in your practice?
Well, the first point you made was really important. I think I need to say that, you know, what is not bullying, like you asked me, for example, you know, being a tough leader is not necessarily a bully. You have to be direct conversations, disciplinary action when it's appropriate, changing hours, all these things are very appropriate. But when it comes with a tone of shaming or humiliating or degrading or demeaning or diminishing, that's not good leadership, right? So now go to the next part of your question about what is the impact? Well, the impact is being humiliated and shamed and excluded and ostracized and feeling like something's just not right. This person is talking to me and demeaning me and making me feel like, you know, my confidence is getting chipped away at, or my self-esteem or my voice is being shut down, oppressed, you know, suppressed. All of that, and, you know, physical and psychological harm, you've lost your sense of psychological safety. I don't know how far you wanted me to go into this because it's vast.
Sure, keep going. It's very interesting. Sure.
We're looking at psychological injury because this is psychological harassment. So there's a psychological component. And that's why I really try to emphasize that you need trauma-informed skills when you're dealing with this, because we're talking about the potential for, perhaps I've never, ever experienced anxiety in my life. And all of a sudden now I'm having anxiety and I'm having panic attacks. That's an injury. If it's resulting because of the way I'm being treated at work, that is an injury. Now I've got a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder when I never had this before, or I've never suffered depression. Now I have a diagnosis of depression or symptoms of trauma, you know, high startle reflex or ruminating thoughts, or I'm laying in bed till 3 a.m. thinking about what the heck happened. And did she really say that? Or did he really do that? And what happens tomorrow if that happens? You know, and some people don't get to sleep till 3, or some wake up at 3 and then they're ruminating. And what happens then? Well, then you've got exhaustion, you've got insomnia. And you know, there's research out there that talking about insomnia. You might as well show up at work drunk if you've got insomnia. So that means you're at high risk of making mistakes, causing errors, maybe an accident. I have one client that literally crossed through a solid line driving home from work.
Wow.
Not fell asleep. She was wide awake, but she was ruminating and thinking and thinking, thinking about what the heck is going on here? Crazy making stuff. So then you've got exhaustion. Well, then you've got anxiety. And what do you do when you are exhausted and have anxiety? You isolate to feel safe. And when you isolate to feel safe, you're left with this thing. And this thing doesn't actually become very trustworthy because it's full of self-doubt. And a lot of other stuff comes into it, you know, like the old stuff comes in, it gets all muddy. And we start to lose ourselves, right? And then you're going to have panic attacks and depression and potentially PTSD. So you're left with that.
Physical. Yeah.
Well, you know that when you're stressed, if you hold it in your body, in your gut, you're going to end up with IBS, ulcers. You're going to end up with a gastrointestinal disorder. If you hold it in your cardiac system, you're going to end up with high blood pressure. You're going to end up with maybe a heart attack, a stroke. If you hold it in your jaw, you're going to end up with TMJ, migraines. Wherever you hold it, your body's going to it's going to show up.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, a diagnosis if you don't pay attention to it.
Yeah. And because so many of us put so much of our heart and soul in our work, and because in so many situations, the boss controls your life, controls your finances, and can often control your home life as well, because as you just so aptly said, it's so all-encompassing. And as you were listing these things, I'm like, oh, that's me. Oh, that was me. Oh, that was me. My heart just keeps dropping. I was a target of bullying for much of my television career. I was in television production. I was also a boss. And at one point, I'll just tell you a quick anecdote. When I spoke to Dr. Gary Namy, who's the godfather of this discipline, if you will, and someone who you and I both know very well and admire, I was learning about this because I didn't know that I'd been bullied until I researched it. I didn't even know what I was going through. And when I learned about bosses and how they treat people, I said, oh my gosh, I may have been a bully boss. And he said to me, well, I said, I raised my voice and I interrupted people when I thought I was right or they were wrong. I did these things. I didn't always speak in a polite manner. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm as guilty as the next guy, mostly guys. And he said, well, how'd you feel about it when you went home? I said, oh, I felt terrible. He goes, well, how many times a year did this happen? Oh, boy, probably a half a dozen times a year, maybe 4, 5, 6. And he said, what happened the next day? I said, well, I came in and apologized, of course. You're not a bully, he said.
No.
I felt better about that, but we all have bad days. This is not about having a bad day.
You have to think about the fact we all go through bad days and life crises too, right? So.
Yeah.
And I'm training to talk about life crises. When you go through, every one of us is going to lose someone we love someday. And if we're in that crisis, we are not ourselves. We might be snippy. We might be agitated. We might be angry and short-tempered. And I mean, depression shows up like that too, right? Loss, grief, depression shows up, agitation, impatience, sometimes anger. And the fact that you would self-assess, that's not what a bully does. The fact that you have some remorse, that's not what a typical bully would do. The fact that you might apologize, but we still have to be responsible for going through a crisis, seeing a grief counselor, getting treatment, whatever that is, and making amends.
But yeah.
a typical bully will not do that.
My bullies did not apologize. And in fact, in many cases, they seem to enjoy it, which will
yeah, mine didn't either.
Yeah. So let's talk more about your experience, because I think this shaped your career, if I understand your story correctly. So you were in social work when the bullying happened to you. I mean, you would think social work is a group of people who have decided, I want to spend my career helping others. And yet you were bullied in a social work job.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, when I was going through and I didn't know it. You know, but when you look at this, in my opinion, the three top careers that are getting bullied, I would say nurses number one. Bullying each other, by the way, not just bullying others, bullying each other, and teachers and social workers. So, you know, we're frontline, we're high crisis. We don't have a whole lot of resources or supports available to us as people that are in the trenches doing all that crisis work. But I mean, I was in social work 22 years. I was highly trained to understand what abuse is, to assess it, to identify it, to address it. I trained investigators. I walked them through mental health systems, the criminal justice system, medical, you name it. But when it started to happen to me at my 22-year mark, it was the last time it ever happened to me because I hit rock bottom. Being a stubborn Scot, I decided I was going to stick in there and I was going to work harder. And this is typical for my clients. We're going to work harder. We're going to prove ourselves. I'm going to come in on Saturdays and Sundays. I'm going to work for my lunches. I'm going to prove to you I'm the best employee out there, that whatever this negative thing is you have against me, you're wrong. Because I knew I was a good worker. I knew I was. In my heart, I knew I was a strong, dedicated, loyal. And I bet you a lot of targets listening are going to go, so am I.
Yes.
Go above and beyond the call of duty, jump to the pump for anybody else. But what that did, it was nearly killed me, because I would try to almost kill myself to prove to these people I was the best employee. And you know what? It made things worse, not better. It made things worse because that wasn't the problem. The problem was I was a threat to them in some way, shape, or form. And the leader of the bully was a psychologist working in a cancer center in a hospital with death and dying. And he was the worst, probably the most insecure man in the hospital. And he taught some of the people below him. And we're talking to HR, a pastor, a social worker. He had them mob a few of us. So I became quite mentally and physically ill. I was, you know, severely depressed. I had PTSD diagnoses. I certainly stood on the edge of that cliff wanting to jump, you know, just sort of metaphorically. But really, and I mean, I had lost tons of weight. I looked, my hair was falling out. I had rash from head to toe. I looked like I was on chemo.
Wow.
But I stuck in there until the universe gave me that kick in the butt and got me out, because I wouldn't have quit.
Yeah, and that's so much a problem for so many of us, including myself and other people I talk to, and you're counseling people every day on this issue. If you quit, the bully wins. And often, I think many of us, and I understand the characteristics that you're describing, which is bully targets tend to be people that work hard, are devoted, are loyal, productive, their coworkers like them.
Skilled.
And so we tend to like our jobs. I was in journalism. I loved it, television, journalism, and news. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And so I didn't want to quit because I loved the work. I loved covering the news. I loved my staff. I loved the storytelling. And I also didn't want the bully to win. If I quit, I'm not a person that was bullied as a child. Most of us that I think are bullied in the workplace aren't the shy, introspective type necessarily. So what's your experience in talking to people? And you seem to get out of it, but how did you feel about it? Because shame was also a part of my experience. How did you handle it and how did you get out of it?
Oh, shame was part of mine. I certainly isolated because of my shame. And, you know, I contemplated, I'm very analytical, very self-insightful. And I realized, just a minute, yes, I'm a social worker who should know that I was being bullied and I didn't and I missed it. And I feel ashamed about that. I'm supposed to know good communication skills and behavior, understand it all. And I was so ashamed that I didn't catch it. Well, nobody's training people in those first year of college or university, first year nursing, first year teachers, first year anything, should get this training to know how to deal with this. This should be mandatory, but nobody trained us. And I realized that, you know, doctors make mistakes, policemen make mistakes, lawyers make mistakes. We all make mistakes. So I just decided being silent is feeding and fueling those abusers. I need to come out of my office and I need to start talking and I need to start. And I never have shut up since. Years of talking, I'm not shutting up yet. So it was all of that, but I didn't want to quit because I wanted to just keep, I wanted to win, but I did end up quitting. Andy, because I got so sick, I had to quit to save my life.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
There was nobody that I could turn to for help. I wish now I'd had legal help when I would have had a hell of a case.
Yeah.
Now I can help other people do that. I can help other people with that so they don't quit.
And so let's talk about that distinction for just a moment. You said you might have had a good case, and it sounds like you did.
Oh, yeah.
In most instances, though, at least my understanding, and I'm somewhat new to this, we're not talking about incivility or harassment based on gender or race or sexual identification, right? And the reason I find this issue so interesting and why I'm so passionate about it, as I know you are, is there aren't laws against this behavior, right? There's nothing really keeping the boss bully or a colleague or whoever it is. There's no laws, and in most cases, no bylaws within the company to stop it, right? And it's different.
That's where you are. But here in Canada, yes, we do have legislation federally and provincially. And our legislation says that you as an employer must have policies and procedures that align with this legislation and that you must train your employees on these policies and procedures. And I will say training on policies and procedures is not enough. You need to train on the human experience here. This is a human experience with psychological impact. So there's much more to it than just policies and procedures. And I want to talk to something that you said about incivility. Remember I said 3 months or more? Prior to that 3 months, we are looking at incivility. We're looking at meanness, rudeness, sarcasm, abrasiveness. All those signs that we used to say, oh, it's just a personality conflict. And we used to, you know, poo-poo it and brush it off, or, oh, they just don't like each other or whatever. We used to brush it off. That's your early warning signs. If you don't deal with it there prior to that 3 months, it's going to evolve to psychological harassment or psychological violence.
Yeah.
So I do agree with you there. But when you bring in things like sexual harassment or gender, ageism, religion or whatever, then you're adding that on to the harassment bullying side.
Understood. Now, this, as I happen to understand, the bullying that you experienced happened a number of years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more. And so everybody I talk to has a bullying story. Now, it might not have gone on for months or years as it did in my case. It seems to have yours. I stayed in television for better or worse. But what have you done in the ensuing years to help others? And where do you think this issue is at the moment? In other words, we've had COVID and some other things. Are things getting any better? It seems to me, and I think this is a word you use as well, to be an epidemic across Canada and certainly across the U.S. Tell me where you think we are since it happened to you. Obviously, you're helping fight it, but it does seem to be still an epidemic.
Well, there's a lot of ways I can answer that. First of all, when I started this about 15 years ago, Dr. Gary Namy was already calling it an epidemic, and it has never not been an epidemic. It's just that awareness is starting, people are starting to wake up. So it's always been really bad. I mean, there's research from 20, 30 years ago you could look at, and they would show you this has always been a major problem. Now, I would say with where you bring in the Me Too movement back in 2000, what was it, 18, 19, 17, you bring that in, plus legislation here in Canada, a lot of exposure on social media of big organizations is now bringing language to people where they can start to identify it and they can start, you know, the silence of that shame being in the closet, it's out. I'd say 2-3 years ago, it came out of the closet. We're talking about it on social media. People are starting to, you know, specialize. They're taking courses on psychological safety. So I would say, in one way, it's better because now it's not a silent epidemic. I would say that's an improvement. We have legislation in Canada that's an improvement. You know, the UK, Australia, there's New Zealand, there's people popping up that are starting to be activists as well and make changes. So I would say on that note, it's moving forward. This is not ever going to be a silent epidemic ever again. Resources are popping up for people so they don't have to go through this alone. That's major success right there, that you don't have to go through it alone. But are the stories getting worse? That's a question I get asked all the time. Are the stories getting worse? In my opinion, I would have to say lately, yeah, I think so. I think the stories are getting worse. I think some of those real psychopathic, sociopathic, narcissistic leaders that have been covering up and hiding stuff, I think they're getting worse at it and causing further damage and harm. Yeah.
So great. That's you went right to where I want to go next, which is we focused on the victims and the targets as we should, but we must talk about the people who are perpetrating this incivility, this meanness, this acrimony against people that are good employees, productive employees. What can you tell me about what you've learned as to who these people are, why they're doing it? And from what I can understand and from the research I've seen, maybe they don't care about the people, but they certainly should care about their business, and they're usually a boss or one of the bosses, and it's also counterproductive to the betterment of the business. So what can you tell us about bosses and what you've learned from talking to the victims as well as doing your own research?
Yeah. Well, one of the services that I do offer is I work with the perpetrators, the bullies, the harassers, you know, the aggressors. There's so many words we could use. I work with them. So an investigation happens, it's substantiated, the guy, the gal, it's found out to be, you know, acting out with bullying behaviors. If they want to keep their job, the employer wants to keep the employee, they'll send them to me on a mandatory basis for an assessment, for change, right? For changing in behaviors, rehabilitation, for lack of a better word. So I have met many men and women over the last 10 years that I've been doing that work. And I don't think they're the psychopaths and sociopaths and narcissists because they won't show up.
Right. They're not coming to you saying, I need help. They're
not the problem. You are, right? So they're not showing up. I get to work with the others. So that ties into, you know, Gary Namy has a bunch of characteristics or different characters of bullies. I have my own set of characters for bullies. I think there's a lot of people who are not psychopaths, sociopaths, who are true blue bullies, but they have histories. They have histories of abuse. They have histories of being trained to be the way they are and rewarded and promoted. And they've learned how to behave that way through other people, old boys club, old girls club, that have trained them that way. And there's deep remorse when we cut through all that and get to them connected to that moral gauge they were born with and forgot they had. So I don't get to work with those. There's other people that do, and I could certainly recommend somebody for you specifically in that works with narcissists and psychopaths. But when it comes to treatment for them, there's really no treatment, right?
And in the both cases, whether there's a psychological diagnosis that could be done, or you know the person enjoys doing it. But in my experience, and I'm curious about your experience, the organizations support it or turn a blind eye to it because either it's the top boss, which has been my experience, or it's somebody close to power that everybody's scared of because they've got the eye and the ear of the CEO, or they're viewed, or maybe they may be very productive. They may be somebody who's a rainmaker making a lot of money. And so the corporation supports it essentially.
Well, I've seen cases where it's the person that's bringing in a ton of money and they know the guy is a jerk. They know he's hurting. They know he's causing harm to very good employees, but they're keeping them because they're making the company a lot of money. I'm seeing cases where they're keeping that person because the other leaders above them have, you know, extorting money, doing other stuff that they don't want that can of worms opened up. If you identify that one, you're going to look at this one. So we got to hide this because we don't want you to show up what we've been doing. So there's all kinds of reasons why this is getting covered up. I've seen so many cases lately where they've lost 3-4 great, amazing employees, like groups of them that have come forward to report, have an abundance of evidence, but they let them go and keep that one person who's going to destroy their company because they're scared of that person, or they've got a, you know, maybe that board is ignorant. They're just not educated. They don't understand this. They don't have the skills. They're scared. I don't know. It's horrible.
I've seen it happen myself. Well, so let's turn in the few minutes remaining we have together. Let's look at a more positive outlook, which is the work you're doing. And there's a term that I've heard lately, but I'm not exactly sure I understand it, but it's trauma-informed. And people who are victims of bullying, yourself, myself, really need counseling because we've been through trauma. Is that too melodramatic? Are we taking ourselves too seriously to suggest that we've been through trauma? And what does it mean when you might see somebody who's trauma-informed to help you with this issue?
Well, you know, I don't think all of us have been traumatized. So I think we have to make sure that we clarify that depending on, it's so important for you to take training to understand this so that you identify early and you protect yourself from serious harm like trauma. So you want trauma-informed training. And when I say trauma-informed training, that's more like a holistic perspective that you're not just looking at policies and procedures, you're looking at the human experience. So you're understanding the mental health risks, the physical risks. You understand that that person in front of you who's showing signs of anger might be actually having a panic attack right now. And you understand the difference. You know, I've stood in front of 30 or 40 people's training when one person stood up, screamed and yelled at me in front of them. If I did not understand the signs of trauma,
yeah,
I ran out that door and never came back. But I saw that man oozing trauma. And I knew what responses he needed from me in order for him to know that I saw him, heard him, and I was going to stay there and be with him as soon as I finished my job. Completely understand how to calm that nervous system that is about to explode in front of you. Same with, you know, investigators. If they're not trauma informed, they're going to use language that potentially could cause further harm. Doctors might cause further harm. Therapists, not all therapists are trauma informed. And if you've got somebody walking in there with full blown trauma and they're scared to death that you're not going to believe them, they're scared to death that you're as a therapist are going to think I'm crazy. The last thing you as a therapist want to do to me is give me CBT therapy. Let's look at your way of thinking. No.
That's not going to work.
It's going to cause further harm. So trauma-informed training, coaching, therapy, assessments, that language is all about understanding that nervous system in front of you.
Well, and the other thing I've kind of learned through my own experience and talking to experts is whether you're experiencing trauma or not, you know, if you were bullied as a child in the playground, it stays with you forever. You remember what happened, how the kids made fun of you, how ashamed you were when you went back to class after you were bullied on the playground, let's call it. And I remember circumstances of bullying from 25 and 30 years ago, like it was yesterday. I can tell the story. I can see it in my mind. These things, whether it's trauma or not, and I'll let you as an expert identify who has trauma and doesn't. But boy, oh boy, it really stays with you. At the time, it hurts, and it stays with you in your long-term memory. And that's also what makes it so tough, because it's an ongoing kind of thing. It's not like, oh, you had it happen, and then you forget about it.
Well, first of all, to be trauma-informed means you do not need to be a psychologist or have a degree in behavior. You just have to understand the basics. So I want to clarify that.
Okay.
You know, but bullying gets you at a soul level.
Yeah.
No, it is soul level. I've heard it identified as soul murder, you know, especially if you've been attacked. I don't know if you remember a conversation the other day, but I said, this is like death by 1,000 cuts.
Yes, I do.
You get a dirty look one day, big deal, but you get a dirty look 30 days or somebody ignores you 50 days in a row. It might be the 600th cut that makes you realize, wait, something's happening here. Yeah. Or the 800th cut or 999. I've changed that death by 1,000 cuts by psychological injury by 1,000 psychological insults.
Yeah.
So it isn't just someone rolling their eyes at us or slamming the door in our face or whatever. It's an accumulation of cut by cut by cut by cut over weeks, months, years that takes anybody down. Doesn't matter how strong and educated and articulate you are. This can harm anyone.
Yeah, it does. Well, Linda, I want to thank you for the great work you and your organization are doing. And I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. I understand you have an offering for the people watching this video.
Yep, I'm willing to give one free consult away to, I don't know how you want to put that out there, but...
And I want to get your contact information so people know how to find you and take advantage of that if they're experiencing the kinds of things you've been talking about. So that's wonderful. And what is the best way to either go to your website, reach you directly?
Go to my website, which I understand will be listed, or they can email me at psychologicalsafetyfirst@gmail.com. And the word first, not the number. So psychologicalsafetyfirst@gmail.com.
All right. Wonderful. Linda, my sincere thanks, and I look forward to further conversations. Final word from me would be to the bully victims watching this. You're not alone. We're here, and we're here for you. Thanks for watching. And Linda, thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.